her hands twisted.
I never thought. I knew she was hiding something. I just assumed she would eventually confide in you.
Rory stared hard at his sister, unable to prevent the momentary flash of anger that went through him for another betrayal, from yet another unexpected source. He took another long drink and allowed the moment to fade. It would do no good to lash out at Margaret. Not for doing what he'd done himself, trusting Isabel.
You should have come to me, he said. But don't blame yourself, Margaret. You were only showing loyalty to your friend. She was an accomplished liar. You were not the only one she fooled.
He couldn't hide the bitterness in his tone. Alex shook his head, still stunned.
So she admitted coming to Dunvegan for the flag?
Rory nodded tersely. Margaret's brows gathered across her nose.
But it wasn't actually the flag she'd placed in her trunk.
No. It was an old shawl of Bessie, though the resemblance was uncanny. For a moment it even fooled me.
But if she meant to steal the flag, why did she not do so when she had the opportunity?
Alex asked. She claimed that she'd decided she couldn't betray us and was planning to use the shawl to trick her uncle. Margaret bit her lip, thinking.
Do you believe her?
That was the question he'd spent the last day trying to avoid. I don't know. Does it matter?
I think it does, Margaret said softly. She loved you, brother. Of that I am sure. I know that she admitted coming to Dunvegan under false pretenses, but from what you said, she only agreed to help Sleet so he would help her clan against the Mackenzies. It sounds like she had no choice. Her clan needed her. I know how important it was for Isabel to earn the respect of her family. She spent her childhood recklessly trying to attract their notice. I suspect coming here was her opportunity to finally prove her worth. But if what she said is true, Isabel chose us.
Can you forgive her so easily, Margaret, when she chose to ally herself with Sleet? Have you forgotten what he did to you?
Rory demanded.
Of course I have not forgotten what Sleet did to me. Sleet is worthy of your wrath. I too burn for revenge. But I shall bide my time and wait for the right opportunity to present itself. I do not excuse what she has done, but I do understand the circumstances. From my own experience, I know how cruel and unyielding Sleet can be. He will twist anything to his purpose. If he wanted something from her, he would not be gainsaid.
Margaret paused.
Have you forgotten what she did for me?
I have not forgotten, Rory replied stonily.
It doesn't make any sense. I agree with Margaret. Isabel loves you. Why did she not confide in you?
Alex asked.
Apparently, she started to after I was injured, but was scared that I would not forgive her. She claimed that she intended to tell me when she was sure I would not repudiate the handfast.
Alex lifted his brow in surprise.
You hadn't told her?
Rory shook his head.
Not until I heard from the king.
It sounds like she had reason, then, not to confide in you,
Margaret asked quietly. Rory clenched his jaw.
She lied to me.
Yes, but she also loves you,
Margaret said. Taking a deep breath, she added,
And I think you love her.
Rory stiffened, refusing to look at his sister, not wanting to give credence to her statement. Love didn't matter, not without trust.
It's done.
He turned to his unusually quiet brother. And what of you, Alex? Do you agree with our sister? Should I forgive my traitorous bride? Alex shook his head, his eyes shining with anger.
Isabel betrayed us all. In your place, I might have done worse.
Rory nodded. Alex turned to leave the room, but looked first to his sister.
Leave him be, Margaret. He has a right to his solitude.
Margaret smiled sadly, leaned over and placed a kiss on his cheek.
I'm sorry, Rory. I know how this must have hurt you. What she did has hurt me too. You must do what you think is best. But are you sure there is no other way?
Rory sat mutely, steeling himself from considering Margaret's question.
I remember this, she said in warning. If you do not want her, someone else will.
Rory's fingers tightened around the stem of his goblet until the silver began to bend. His reaction was instantaneous. Violently, he tossed the now ruined goblet to the floor, where it clattered conspicuously in the otherwise deathly quiet room. Margaret turned and followed Alex out the door.
I think you have your answer, Rory. If what she said about her clan needing sleet is true, you might not have much time to figure out what you want. Her family may be forced to seek another alliance soon, one that could take her from you forever.
Rory did not give any evidence that he had heard her. Once again he sat motionless before the flickering flames of the soul-cleansing fire. But he had. 3 days later, the MacDonald of Sleet watched from the battlements of Dunscaith Castle as the group of MacLeod clansmen approached over the tangled grassy moors. He recognized the hooded woman astride the palfrey immediately. After all, he had provided her cloak. Sleet swore, wiping the back of his hand across his mouth to clear the residue of wine. So, his disloyal niece returned under guard. She must have been discovered. 'Twas as he had expected then. The chit had failed. Silly wench, to succumb so easily to the wiles of a handsome face. He shrugged with disgust. Well, what could you expect from a woman? Women were good for only two things. Providing a substantial talker, and providing an heir. Good thing he was smart enough not to wager his quest for the lordship solely on the capabilities of a lass. An alternative plan was already in position. He drew his fingers across his chin, considering her return. Isabel knew where the secret entrance was to Dunvegan. Of that he had no doubt. Mackenzie had followed the three retreating MacLeods after the latest attack, until they had simply disappeared right into the face of the rocky cliff beneath Dunvegan. The Mackenzie chief had searched the area exhaustively for the entrance, but to no avail. But Isabel would be able to find it. He would watch his dear niece closely, and wait. She might be of some use yet. Another bungled attempt on MacLeod, he thought, disgusted. The man was proving exceedingly difficult to kill. He'd had high hopes that his last attempt might succeed, until his informant had apprised him of the MacLeod's miraculous recovery. Sleet did not believe it was actually magic that had enabled MacLeod to evade death so many times, but he would take no chances. That bloody flag had defeated the MacDonalds before. It would not do so again. Magic or luck, it did not matter. It would run out soon enough. All was ready. Soon he would reclaim the lordship and rule the Western Isles. It wouldn't be long now before his dream was fully realized. The great Rory MacLeod would not stand in his way. Chapter 24. Isabel waited for a reprieve that never came. Though her head knew differently, her heart refused to accept that he might not forgive her. Bessie had urged her to give him time, time for his anger to dissipate and understanding to take hold. But Isabel had waited long enough. If she waited any longer, she might find Rory wed to another. A sharp pain pierced her chest, as it always did whenever she thought of him, which was constantly. She yearned for perspective, the bittersweet dulling edge of time. But it had been only a little over 1 week since he had sent her away. That meant enduring 5 days alone with her uncle, forced to wait for her family to arrive at Dunscaith and escort her back to Strome Castle. Not that she looked forward to the impending confrontation with her father. No, she had failed doubly, letting her family down and losing Rory. But at least the arrival of her family would bring a stay from Sleet's daily interrogations. She sensed that her uncle was merely biding his time, waiting for her to make a mistake. Clearly, he did not believe her story, that she was so deep in shock after the attack by the Mackenzies that she could not remember how to access the secret entrance to Dunvegan. Sleet was planning something.
if only she could find out what. She stood, as she had for days, at the window in her bower, overlooking the beautiful loch, staring north past the great Quillin in the direction of her forsaken heart, scanning always for a rider, someone to bring her the news she longed to hear. Instead, a loud rumbling knocked her out of her dreary reverie. Instinctively, she clasped her hands over her stomach as it beckoned noisily for sustenance. Her nose wrinkled at the thought of food. Admittedly, she had not eaten much over the last week. The pungent smells of food turned her stomach, but she knew by the looseness of her clothing that she had lost too much weight. She would need to be strong if she was going to fight for Rory. Was she going to fight for Rory? Her eyes widened. She felt a bud of awakening in the wintry slumber of her anguish, and a trace of something else that could only be termed excitement. She had to do something. She could not go on like this. Isabel needed to let him know how sorry she was for what she'd done, and find some way to make him understand. If only she could make it up to him, and prove that she was worthy of his trust, and his love. She headed downstairs toward the kitchens. First, she needed to eat. Then she would be able to think, and plan.
"Good morning, Willie. Are you going somewhere?"
A very distracted Willie had just exited her uncle's solar when Isabel greeted him on her way back from the kitchens. She felt much better after the small meal she had managed to force down, and was ready to begin planning. Startled by the sound of her voice, Willie stumbled, and the stack of missives in his hands flew up in a parchment rainstorm over his head, scattering haphazardly around him on the floor. After a stunned moment, he managed to collect his thoughts enough to speak.
"Good morning, my lady."
She did not have the heart to correct his improper address. He looked flustered enough as it was.
"It appears you are off to deliver some messages."
"Yes, my lady."
He managed to right himself, still staring at her. Recognizing the look, Isabel reluctantly gave up on conversation. She bent down to help him collect the jumbled letters strewn across the rushes. Suddenly, her eyes caught sight of the familiar script and distinctive seal. Per mare per terras. Were the capricious fates smiling on her at last? Her heart beat furiously with anticipation, and her eyes widened when she noticed whom it was addressed to. "Please let this be what I'm praying for." Carefully, she craned her neck to make sure Willie could not see what she was doing as she slipped the letter between the folds of her gown. Handing the remaining letters to Willie, she smiled with genuine delight, for the first time in over a week. Distractedly, she wished him a good journey and tried not to race up the stairs. Isabel had been gone for only a little more than a week, and Rory had done nothing more than sit before the fireplace and drink rather copious amounts of curium. He ran his fingers through unkempt hair, snagging on a few knots along the way, and swept it back from his face. A wee lass had toppled the powerful Rory Moore. He would laugh if the irony weren't so painful. For a man who prided himself on control and decisiveness, discovering that he was not immune to emotions was a severe blow. Every man had his weakness. Apparently, Isabel MacDonald was his. The question was, what was he going to do about it? What he wanted to do was immerse himself in his duties, find a way to repair the alliance with Argyle, and begin plans to resume the fighting with Sleet. Instead, he found himself dissecting every moment of the last few months and analyzing every word of their conversation, unable to focus on anything else. In repudiating the handfast and sending her away, Rory had acted as he always did, coolly, dispassionately, and decisively. His judgment had been sound. Never had he questioned a decision. But he realized that in this, in determining the fate of someone he loved, he was without experience. He could not simply cut Isabel out of his heart because he wanted to. She'd wronged him, yes. But when his anger had cooled, Rory realized that Isabel's treachery was not as clear-cut as he'd first thought. She'd handfasted with him under false purpose. But he could not fault her loyalty to her clan.
she should have come to him, though he could understand her hesitancy. She had spied on him, but she hadn't taken the flag. But one realization above all blocked his ability to put Isabel behind him forever. Had she truly chosen him over her uncle and her family? A knock on the door disturbed his reverie. He glanced up to see Douglas.
A letter, chief, from the king.
Rory looked at Douglas blankly, his eyes burning from lack of sleep. It took him a moment to realize what he held in his hand. Douglas knew as well, for he stood woodenly, awaiting instructions, and would not meet Rory's glance. Slowly, Rory cracked the seal, unfolded the parchment, and began to read. When he'd finished, he let out a pained laugh.
Well, it appears I have an answer to my proposal.
Yes,
Douglas said evenly, with no evidence of the curiosity Rory was sure he felt. The king has agreed to cede Trottinish to the Macleods as part of Isabel's tocca upon our marriage.
What will you do?
Rory shrugged.
I don't know.
It was the answer to his prayers, come too late.
Should I instruct the royal emissary to wait for your response?
No. I need some time to think.
Dismissing Douglas, Rory reread the passage that had struck him. Since our dearest Isabel assures us of her happiness, and has also urged the disposition of Trottinish to the Macleods in her recent missive to the Queen, we are pleased to do so under the conditions outlined in your letter. Isabel had written to the Queen on his behalf. The small crack in his resolve broke open. She had chosen him, and in part thanks to Isabel. He now held the means to reclaim Trottinish for the Macleods and, at least partially, to avenge Sleet's dishonor to the clan, if he married her. But could he find the strength to forgive her? Rory felt a flicker of something inside him. He recognized what it was immediately. Possibility. Chapter 25. The MacDonald of Sleet was furious to find Isabel missing. He did not like being duped, especially by a lass. He'd been waiting for something like this, but she'd outmaneuvered him. Though surprisingly, he had to admit that his little niece had impressed him. Janet's daughter was stronger than she appeared. Sleet was not completely devoid of familial sentiment. He also regretted that his niece must be sacrificed. Almost. But it was necessary. His gaze moved calculatedly to his newly arrived guest. The Mackenzie chief would not be satisfied with anything less than Isabel's death. Isabel's near rape at the hands of the Mackenzie's son, the stupid boy, had been another unfortunate cost of war. Sleet stroked his chin, both thoughtfully and philosophically. No, Isabel's death could not be avoided. If she'd done her part, he might have been moved to help her, but, like most women, she'd disappointed him. It was pure chance that had brought the Mackenzie to Dunscaith only hours after Isabel's disappearance had been detected. A few hours later, and there wouldn't be a chance of passing her. Fortunately, Sleet had discovered Isabel's absence almost right away. Another piece of luck. A kind-hearted maidservant had thought to entice the girl to eat with special honey-sweetened oatcakes, only to find the chit had disappeared. He'd guessed immediately where she was headed.
Go after her, Sleet said to the other chief, but you will have to travel fast to overtake her, and you must not be seen. A few men, no more. If you are patient, she will lead you to the entrance.
The Mackenzie's eyes narrowed.
How can you be sure she returns to Dunvegan?
Sleet shrugged.
Instinct. She fancies herself in love with him. Besides, where else would she go?
He sneered.
She'll be careful to make sure that no one is following her. But of course, you won't be following her.
I'll ride straight for the place we lost them after the attack. I know just where to wait.
I'll follow her inside, and my men will wait for you,
the Mackenzie said. Sleet nodded.
Do nothing rash. We won't be far behind.
With the MacLeod dead, and a surprise attack on the castle, victory would finally be his. Perhaps his little niece had been useful after all. She was almost there, back to Dunvegan, to Rory, and to what she hoped was forgiveness. For Isabel held in her possession the means to prove her loyalty to Rory. Excitement and anticipation alone urged her on, as her body had long ago stopped cooperating. Her shoulders slumped, heavy with a deep, bone-aching fatigue, such as she had never before experienced. Usually an excellent rider, she struggled to keep herself upright astride the palfrey. When was the last time she'd been able to feel her backside? It must have been miles ago, hours ago. The insides of her thighs would be sore for weeks. But she had to keep a steady pace that would get her there as quickly as possible. Dirt and dust streaked her face. With the back of her arm, she wiped away the sheet of dampness on her forehead. There was little she could do about the beads of perspiration collecting under the large ball of hair bound at the back of her neck. It was too hot. She wore a broad-brimmed hat. But after the long sunny days in the saddle, even that had been unable to prevent the crimson burn now staining her nose and cheeks. At least her cramped hands were protected from the sun by the thin gloves she usually wore with her habit. Unfortunately, the fashionable thin leather gloves might protect her from the sun and the midges, but after long hours of constant hard use, they weren't protecting her from much else. The voluminous skirts were hiked up to her thighs to accommodate her riding astride, but were otherwise too cumbersome for such a long, difficult journey. She dearly wished she'd been able to find a pair of breeches and sturdy leather gloves, but there hadn't been time. She had traveled north for 2 days and nights, over 50 miles along the road, at times path, from Dunscaith, located on the western peninsula of Sleet. 2 days traveling for a journey that normally took 3 full days or more. She recalled the nervous excitement she'd felt when she'd cautiously snuck out of a sleeping Dunscaith, armed with proof of her uncle's perfidy. The letter she had stolen from Willie was more than she could have dreamed. She doubted even her father was aware of Sleet's plans. With this letter, Rory would have the means to destroy her uncle. It would give him the weapon he needed to extract Sleet from the king's favor. And in doing so, Isabel would hand him what he wanted most of all, a way to avenge the dishonor done to his clan at the hands of Sleet. And Isabel hoped it would indisputably prove her loyalty to him. Anxious to leave, she'd nonetheless been forced to wait, making sure that Willie had left to deliver the rest of his messages before she set out. She wanted to make sure no one was aware of a missing letter. But Willie left right after their collision in the hall, enabling her to sneak out that very night. Now, it was late morning on the third day of the journey, and she was only a few furlongs from her destination. She patted her mount fondly along the side of its warm neck. Her uncle's stables were among the best in the Highlands and Isles. This purloined palfrey was undeniably a magnificent animal. She knew she'd used it badly, but she had no other choice. She had to keep moving, to keep well ahead of any pursuers. She had allowed herself and the horse a few hours of sleep at night, but otherwise kept stops to a minimum. She couldn't allow her uncle's men time to catch up to her if they were following. She dared not risk stopping during the day for longer than the time it took to water and feed the exhausted animal. The meager food supply she had managed to save from her last dinner at Dunscaith had run out yesterday. The persistent headache she'd had since then from lack of food had subsided a bit, but she knew that once she dismounted she would fight dizziness. At least she was familiar with this part of the road. At times, she worried that her poor navigation skills would lead her down the wrong road. On her first day of travel, she had narrowly avoided taking the wrong fork in the path, heading toward Port Rye instead of Dunvegan. At the base of the Great Killian Mountains, she was much more careful after that. During the day, she used the path of the sun to keep her heading due north, but navigation was more difficult at night. She dared not stop and ask for directions for fear that her uncle's men would use this to track her. That they had not caught up with her was surprising. For the first few hours after sunrise on the day she'd left, when she'd known they must have discovered her missing, she'd jumped at every sound, looked warily at every village, and caught herself looking behind her so much that her neck had begun to hurt. She had brought her bow for protection, but so far had not needed it. Either her uncle was not aware of where she was headed, or, more likely, he must have decided to wait for her father to arrive before following her. Utter weariness prevented her from noticing the lavish bounty of the countryside, spread out like a banquet before her. The hills were scattered with a kaleidoscope of summer wildflowers. Lavender bunches of heather formed a natural border to the road. The sea sparkled on her left, and the green, grassy moors undulated with a gentle breeze on her right. The lush density of the forests beckoned ahead of her. A sudden, inexplicable chill, perhaps the cold wind of remembrance, crept down the back of her neck. This was just about the place where the Mackenzies had attacked Rory. Dunvegan was just ahead. She steered her palfrey off the trail and headed into the copse. She would take no chances. She would have to use the secret entrance. She dared not risk that Rory might refuse her entry to the castle. This time she would not give him a choice. Rory would listen to her, whether he wanted to or not. Isabel focused on the task before her, concentrating on remembering the way to the entrance. The closer she drew to the hidden entrance, the more she checked her surroundings. Nothing. There was nobody following her. Of that she was sure. She retraced their steps along the inlet of the loch and paused before the dramatic rocky cliff. Dunvegan, in all its forbidding splendor, sat perched high on the rock above her. The walls were situated so close to the edge of the cliff, it looked as if it might slide off with only the slightest nudge. The sheer, thick, gray stone edifice hardly offered a warm welcome. But rather than dissuade Isabel from her purpose, the sight of that grimly beautiful pile of rocks filled her heart with bursting joy and brought a broad smile of accomplishment to her weary countenance. Her back straightened as she drew up her shoulders. Dunvegan. Rory. She'd made it. Almost. Isabel held her head completely still, chin lifted, ears alert, eyes scanning back and forth, listening for the smallest sound or flash of movement. Hearing nothing other than the steady movement of the loch on her left and the sound of the breeze flitting through the leaves and underbrush of the forest on her right, she looked carefully once more behind her, then headed for the jagged, rocky entrance that lay hidden before her. She urged the frightened horse forward, straight into the face of the cliff, where it joined with the edge of the forest. Taking a deep breath, praying for strength, she pulled the reins for a sharp turn to the left and slid into the cool, dark dampness of the tunnel. Chapter 26. Hold fast that which is good. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21. Isabel was cold, exhausted, and hungry. She'd waited in the tunnel until the sounds above in the kitchens had quieted before pulling herself carefully through the secret door, winding her way through the darkened corridors, and stealthily making her way to the fairy tower. Unsure of her reception, Isabel approached the tower with burgeoning unease. What would Rory do when he found her in his room? Would he toss her out without listening to her, or worse? She wished she could be sure she was doing the right thing, but she thought of her misery the past week and a half and knew that she had no other choice. She had to try to make things right. She paused in the doorway of the fairy tower, casting a quick glance around before darting across the entry. She'd just started to climb the stairs when someone grabbed her from behind, yanking her momentarily against a chest as hard as stone. A scream caught in her throat. Her captor spun her around to face him, and she exhaled. Rory. She was so relieved to find him after all that she'd gone through to get here, after the days of agony that had marked their separation, after thinking she might not ever see him again, that she could have collapsed and burst into tears. Her knees weakened. If not for his support, she would have slid to the floor in a grateful heap. Then he spoke, and her relief stalled.
"By all that is holy, Isabel," he swore, "what are you doing here?"
She shrank from the fury in his voice. Cautiously, she raised her eyes to his. So long had she been anticipating this moment. The rush of emotion in just seeing him again was far more overwhelming than she could have imagined. She took in every beloved detail of his face,
the strong, hard lines of his ruggedly handsome features, the brilliant blue eyes, the square jaw, the thick golden strands of his... She stopped and frowned. Actually, Rory looked horrible. He looked as though he hadn't slept in days. In truth, he looked as awful as she surely did. Something kindled inside her. Was it possible? Had he missed her? She dared not allow herself to hope. So desperately did she want to touch him, she placed her hand against his chest, savoring the heavy beat of his heart under her palm. She wanted nothing more than to throw herself into his arms and beg his forgiveness. But she couldn't bear the pain of his rejection. Not again. Not until he'd heard what she had to say. If he would listen. His eyes were hot as he scanned her face, almost hungrily. For a moment she thought he wanted her, and her body responded, softening with awareness. He tightened his grip on her arms, pulling her imperceptibly closer, and she felt the heat radiating from his body, smelled the beloved scent of heather and spice. He was so achingly close, it hurt not to press her body against his. He seemed tight with restraint. His teeth clenched, and she noticed the telltale tick in his jaw. "Well, explain why I find you here, and not at Dunskeith, or on your way home to your father."
"I needed to see you. I know you said you never wanted to see me again, but I have to explain."
Before he could argue, she burst out,
"When I agreed to help my uncle, I did not know you or your family. I was only trying to help my clan. I should have told you the truth as soon as I realized how I felt about you, but I couldn't. Not while I was unsure of your intentions. Spying on you when you told Alex where you kept the flag was wrong and unintentional. I'm sorry for it, but even by then I knew I would never betray you or your family."
Her eyes raked his face, looking for any indication that her words might have penetrated his steely barrier. But all she could see was a man barely keeping a check on his anger.
"I know you have no reason to believe me, so I've brought you proof of my loyalty."
"And this proof of your loyalty is the reason I see you like this, so weary you can barely stand."
His eyes turned black.
"Where is your escort?"
She looked down sheepishly, shifting uncomfortably beneath his piercing gaze.
"You traveled almost a length of sky by yourself."
Incredulous, his voice shook with anger.
"Forsooth, don't you realize what could have happened to you? Dear God, Isabel, who could you be so reckless?"
He was livid, but Isabel also detected a thread of alarm in his voice. His hands still gripped her shoulders, and she didn't know whether he wanted to shake her or crush her against his chest. She wanted so badly to believe that he was happy to see her. Was she only imagining his concern? Unshed tears burned behind her eyes.
"I was desperate. I had to see you. I'd hoped you..."
"Wanted to see me." She couldn't get the words out. Something flickered across his face. For a moment, she thought he was going to pull her into his arms and kiss her. Instead, he dropped his hands and turned away, raking his fingers through his hair. After a few minutes, his eyes found hers again.
"You used the secret entrance."
Isabel bit her lip. She knew he'd be angry about that.
"I was very careful. I feared you would refuse my entry if I came by the sea gate."
She looked up.
"I couldn't take the chance."
"I forgot how many of our secrets you share."
He reached down to stroke her cheek, wiping the dirt and grime from her face. The gentleness of the movement stunned her. Emotions gathered in her throat, hot and raw. The longing for the closeness they'd once shared was nearly unbearable. The times when she didn't have to stop herself from touching him.
"What am I to do with you, Isabel?"
He took an ominous step closer. "First, you will explain what has brought you here in such haste, and with disregard for your own safety." Isabel felt light-headed with relief. She had a chance. But sudden fear gripped her. So much was riding on this. She took a deep breath and began.
"While at Dunskeith a few days ago, I was helping Willie recover some missives that he dropped on the floor, when I noticed Sleet's badge on a letter addressed to Robert Cecil, the first Earl of Salisbury.
She paused, waiting for Rory to glean the significance. She caught the sudden spark in his eye and continued, this time excitedly.
I immediately questioned why Sleet would be writing the Queen of England's Secretary of State. I suspected that my uncle was trying to find another way to obtain the lordship for himself. He hinted as much to me in a conversation we had at the gathering. When I found the letter, I realized that Sleet, and probably Mackenzie, were in treasonous contact with Queen Elizabeth.
You deduced this from the name on a missive? Rory asked, clearly impressed.
I was desperate to find anything that will make you understand that I would never betray you. And the letter, well, it just seemed odd. Of course, when I read it, I could not believe what I'd stumbled upon. Sleet proposed a new rebellion in the Isles. He offered his services to Elizabeth, actually precipitously referring to himself as the Lord of the Isles. He proposed to unite the Highland chiefs to the Queen and keep the lordship for himself, and destroy the MacLeods in the process. With the MacLeods in shambles, there would be no one powerful enough in the Isles to contest his claim.
Rory shook his head. "'Tis even worse than I expected. I knew he wanted to re-establish the lordship, but I didn't think he would commit treason to assure it. I may be at the Horn, and do not agree with James's plans for the barbarians of the Isles, but to invite the bloody English into Scotland is an extremely dangerous and foolish proposition. He looked back at her, his expression inscrutable. Do you know what you've risked in coming here? If your uncle realizes what you know, your life will be in danger.
He doesn't know.
You're sure?
She nodded, and her head spun with dizziness. Something was wrong. She didn't feel very well.
Do you know what this means, Isabel? If the king discovers what Sleet has done, he will be destroyed.
I know.
And you rode for days to tell me this.
Isabel nodded again, too teeming with expectation to speak. Would it be enough to prove her devotion? Would he ever be able to forgive her? She forced herself to look at his face. What she saw there made the tears that she'd been holding start to fall. He gazed at her with such emotion, such longing, that her fear abated, and the hope she'd been holding inside burst free, overwhelming her with the sheer intensity of emotion.
I don't know what to say, he said roughly.
Say that you believe me.
He wiped the tears from her cheeks, his thumb running over her trembling lips.
Eyelass, I believe you, but unfortunately, without the letter, we have no proof.
She reached into her waistband and pulled out the folded parchment.
You mean this letter?
She smiled through the haze of happy tears, and promptly fainted. Rory thought his heart had stopped when Isabel crumpled to the floor. He lurched forward, catching her just before she hit the ground. The same fear gripped him that he felt that day in the forest. Only when he'd assured himself that she'd fainted did it dissipate, a little. But what the hell had she done to herself? Carefully, he lifted her in his arms and carried her up the stairs to his solar. Looking at the wan, dust-smeared cheek resting peacefully against his chest, he felt his heart flip. All that he could have lost hit him full force. When he'd first caught sight of her, he'd been shocked. Not only to have her seemingly materialize out of his dreams, but to see her so obviously exhausted. Her glorious hair flew in wild disarray around her pinched face, and dark shadows circled her luminous violet eyes. She must not have eaten in days. Her wrinkled gown hung loose about her thin frame. His first impulse had been to take her in his arms and prove in the most basic way possible that she was real, but anger at seeing her like that had checked him. When he thought of what she must have gone through to reach him, and the risk she'd taken in bringing him Sleet's treasonous letter, he shuddered as the possibilities chilled him. If anything had happened to her, he would never have forgiven himself. The timing of her arrival could not have been more ironic. After the arrival of the king's missive, Rory had made the decision to retrieve his bride. Even if he had to take an army to Strome Castle, he would get her back,
but he had another plan, and hoped that laying siege would not prove necessary. Putting that plan into motion had delayed his pursuit of Isabel. He'd still had many questions, but Isabel's letter to the Queen on his behalf was proof of her loyalty. Now, after what she'd brought him, there could be no doubt. Thanks to Isabel, he had the means to destroy Sleet and avenge the dishonor done to his clan. He laid her on the bed. Her eyes fluttered open almost immediately, and Rory felt relief pour out of him.
"What happened?"
she asked, disoriented. "You fainted."
"I don't faint."
She tried to sit up, but quickly lay back down. He frowned. "When is the last time you ate?" A delicate flush rose to her pale cheeks.
"I don't know."
"I will send for something." He started to get up, but she caught his arm.
"Please don't," she beseeched. "I don't want anything. Not yet. Not until I know that you can forgive me. I'm so sorry, Rory."
Her voice broke.
"There were many things I did wrong, and I know I have no right to ask for your forgiveness. But I need you to know that I would never betray you."
He gathered her against him, her damp cheek pressed against his chest, as he savored the sensation of holding her in his arms again. "I know." She looked up at him with watery eyes.
"You do?"
"Aye," he whispered, a husky caress deepening his voice. He could forgive her. Deep in his bones, he knew that Isabel had not been merely acting over the past few months. She loved him. He knew she would not betray him. He must have accepted that when he sent her away, for she knew far too many of their secrets. If he truly believed her a traitor, he would not have allowed her to leave. Was not the badge of the MacLeods, "Hold fast"? God's blood, he would hold fast to Isabel. She belonged to him, and he would have her. He could do his duty and have the woman he loved. Rory bent over her, cupping her chin in his hand, and forcing her to meet his gaze. "I will promise you for not telling me about your uncle's plan, but you will promise me that you will not listen in on any other private conversations, unintentional or not." Isabel blushed to her roots.
"I promise. No more peeking through cracks in doors."
"Good." He swept a lock of hair from her face, looking at her tenderly. "And more important, you will also swear that you will never endanger yourself like this again." She nodded, tears sliding down her cheeks again.
"I didn't know what else to do."
"Shh." He stopped her with a press of his fingers against her softly parted lips. He'd waited long enough. He had to taste her. No longer able to hold back, he lowered his head, covering her mouth with his in a gentle, seductive kiss. His heart jumped at the achingly familiar taste. She was pure ambrosia. The honey of her mouth mingled with the bittersweet salt from her tears. But Isabel did not want a gentle wooing. At the first touch of his mouth, she moaned, encircling her arms around his neck, bringing him down hard on top of her. She strained and pressed against him, kissing him harder, with an almost desperate plea. Rory felt his own restraint snap, responding to the savage cry of her desire. The subtle seduction of moments before was replaced by a violent surge of demanding passion. His mouth moved over hers hungrily, possessively, branding her with his lips and tongue. She belonged to him. He would leave her no doubt. Her mouth opened, and he slid in his tongue, locking with hers in an intimate duel of thrust and parry. He delved deeper and deeper, tasting, exploring, as if devouring the very recesses of her soul. It wasn't enough. Not until he was thrust deep inside her, and she was shaking around him, with the spasms of her release. Not until they had burned away the memories of their parting with the fire of their passion. Even then, Rory knew it would never be enough. From the first touch of his mouth, Isabel's entire body shivered with relief and desire. She was nearly undone by the familiar taste and distinctively masculine smell of him. That wonderful mixture of salt and heather. She moaned, pressing her body deeper into his familiar hold. Gentle curves against warm, hard muscle.
Her hands roamed his back and shoulders, exploring the familiar ridges of steel. He'd regained some of the weight he had lost from the fever, she realized. But there was still a hungry leanness to him that had not been there before the attack. His muscles bulged under her fingertips, and a spark of awareness surged through her. The heat between them flamed instantly, as if it had never been extinguished. As if it had merely lain dormant, smoldering, these last 2 weeks. There was an urgency to their movements that recalled the long separation. Isabel felt the familiar, anxious tingling low in her belly. She instinctively shifted her hip toward his. Rory clutched her sore bottom, holding her firmly against the solid proof of his claim. The pain of the saddle was forgotten in the hazy warmth flooding her senses. Suddenly, his hands were everywhere, cupping her breasts, molding her hips, sliding down her thighs. His mouth pressed against her neck and shoulders, scraping the delicate skin with his rough beard. Her skin prickled with goose flesh. She wanted him so badly. She felt his fingers expertly work the laces of her gown. He pushed the filthy gown off her shoulders and pulled it over her hips to drop to the floor. Next went her stays and bolster. His fingers slid under the thin linen fabric of her sark, tauntingly tracing the curve of her breast. Isabel felt singed wherever he touched. When his mouth deliciously followed the path of his hands, she wriggled uncontrollably. She felt her hose slide off, felt her sock lifted over her head until she lay completely naked. Awareness tinged her skin pink. But she was beyond embarrassment, and Rory had completely exhausted his reserves. Isabel was mesmerized by the power of the desire that flooded his eyes as they roamed her naked body. His voice was rough with emotion. "You are so beautiful, my love." He unfastened the brooch that held his plaid and pulled his wrinkled Lancroix over his head. It was her turn to admire him. Boldly, her eyes raked the flat stomach lined with muscle, the broad chest, the muscular arms and legs, the sheer size of his stiffened arousal. He was spectacular. "So are you," she said huskily. "It's been too long." Her mouth felt too dry to speak. She nodded. He slid down on top of her. At the touch of his skin to hers, Isabel melted. She felt sweetly damp and hot where their bodies joined. When his length pressed into her belly, she circled her hips against him encouragingly, sliding her damp opening against the head of his arousal.
"Isabel, if you do that again, I may unman myself."
His voice was gruff with desire. Isabel ignored him, reaching for him, grasping the velvety skin firmly in her hand. She moved her hand to the rhythm he had taught her. She watched his face stiffen, his jaw clench as if in pain. Wantonly, she increased the speed. Mesmerized by the feeling of control over this powerful man, she watched his flat stomach muscles clench. She could feel the pressure building beneath her hand and rubbed her thumb over the hot drop that escaped from his hold.
"Damn you, love! We'll see how much you enjoy such torture."
Rory yanked her hand from him and roughly pinned both her hands above her head with one hand. She knew his strength. She would never be able to break free, even if she wanted to. His golden hair spilled forward across his eyes, but she caught the wicked grin he gave her, and it sent another shiver up her spine. His tongue traced a path down her chest, flicking to nudge her nipples erect. Blowing, raking his teeth lightly across the tips, she writhed beneath him with pleasure, her hips rising to search for his length. He moved back, refusing her request. His mouth enveloped the tip of her breast, and he sucked gently. Isabel felt the sharp sensation of pleasure at the squeeze of his mouth, but she wanted more, much more. Rory increased her agony as his mouth slowly, exquisitely, trailed down her belly, licking and flicking her blazing, sensitive skin with his tongue. His hand reached down between her legs. Her anticipation caused her breath to catch. She couldn't think about anything other than his hand, his mouth, anything but how much she wanted him to touch her. He teased and taunted, brushing, but not stroking the pulse that was clenching with desire. His mouth left feather kisses along the teasing path of his fingers. She lifted her hips to his mouth in silent entreaty.
"How does that feel, love?"
"Please, Rory." He chuckled.
"Tell me how much you want me."
"Please, I want to feel you touch me. I want you inside me."
He groaned. "I think you have learned your lesson in torture, my love."
His finger slid inside her as he began to bring her to heaven. She closed her thighs against his hand, increasing the pressure, the sweet friction that would make her shatter. She knew she was close, and her mind went black as the rush of heat and sharp spasms signaled her release. Quickly he moved over her, releasing her hands and driving into her in one all-consuming thrust. Isabel gasped to feel the strength of him inside her, the heavy, thick way he filled her. The sensation intensified the power of her climax as the spasms came harder and faster. He grasped her hips, lifting her to meet his long thrusts. Isabel arched her back, urging him to take her harder, deeper. She needed to feel the force of his passion, to feel how much he needed her. Rory sensed her urgency, and his hips pounded against her, wild with unbridled desire. He'd never been so rough with her before. She tightened against him again, as wave after wave of sensation exploded inside her. He threw back his head and sank deep into her, pulsing as the force of his release gripped him in its shuddering hold. He held her deep, allowing the waves of her own passion to ebb gently around him, until, strength depleted, he collapsed on top of her. Naked flesh to naked flesh, chest to chest, two hearts beating frantically together. He rolled to the side and gently moved a strand of damp hair from her eyes. The tenderness in his gaze took her breath away. When she thought of what she'd nearly lost, Isabel could not prevent the tears that spilled down her cheeks. She might not know what the future held, but he'd forgiven her. It was enough. He looked confused.
"What's wrong? Was I too rough with you?"
She shook her head and smiled.
"I'm just so happy."
He took her chin in his hand and dropped a light kiss on her nose.
"You're exhausted."
He tucked her under his arm and started issuing orders. "First food and a bath, then we sleep." For once, Isabel was only too happy to follow his command. Chapter 27. A chill at the back of Rory's neck stirred him from the vice-like arms of slumber, but the warning had come too late. Falling asleep with Isabel after nearly 2 weeks of sleepless nights had dulled his senses, severely limiting his instincts. He woke to the cold press of steel against his neck, and the malevolent, glassy-eyed Mackenzie hovering over them. Rory stilled. The invigorating blood rush of battle swept all vestiges of sleep from his body. Every nerve ending flared, primed to attack. Seeing that Rory was awake, the Mackenzie chief jostled Isabel.
"Get up, whore!"
He wanted to reach out to protect her, but he dared not move. Not yet. Not with the blade so close. It took a moment for the haze of slumber to clear enough for Isabel to realize what was happening. Rory watched her eyes widen with fear.
"Move slowly, love," Rory soothed. "Stay calm."
The Mackenzie sneered, his expression teeming with the promise of revenge.
"I said get up, whore!"
Rory swore.
"Do as he says, love."
Isabel clutched a sheet to her nakedness and rose from the bed. The moon lit the sensuous curves of her figure to perfection. The Mackenzie did not move the sword from Rory's neck, but his eyes devoured her near nakedness. His grayish tongue darted out to wet his lips. Lust transformed his features into a mask of depraved cruelty. Rory felt every muscle in his body clench. Rage surged through him. Killing the man who dared threaten his woman would be a pleasure, but first he needed to create a diversion. Unfortunately, Isabel seemed to have the same idea. Rory could see how terrified she was, but heedless of the risk, she drew the Mackenzie's gaze to her,
innocently allowing the sheet to fall low on her breasts. Damn. A hot burst of anger erupted inside him. She'd sworn not to endanger herself. He was going to throttle her when this was done. The only thing that kept him from doing it right now was that he knew she was trying to sacrifice herself for him, and her distraction was working. Too well.
How did you get here?
Rory asked, though he'd already figured it out. The Mackenzie's eyes still gorged on Isabel's body. But at least he did not move to touch her.
Why, I followed the girl, of course.
That's impossible, Isabel exclaimed. I made sure I was not followed.
You were careful to make sure no one was behind you. But I had an advantage. I knew where you were headed. Where you had disappeared last time. So I waited for you to come to me.
Isabel cursed softly and turned to Rory. I'm so sorry. It's all my fault.
Instinctively, Rory moved to reassure her, only to stop at the pressure of the blade against his neck. He sat back.
You couldn't have known, love.
He turned back to the Mackenzie. The castle was silent. It was a good sign.
Where are the others? Did you come alone?
The Mackenzie shrugged.
Patience, MacLeod. All things in good time.
He threw a lascivious glance at Isabel.
Some things can't wait.
The Mackenzie was too eager to kill them. Rory's mind worked quickly. It might work to their advantage if the Mackenzie had followed Isabel inside by himself, or with only a few men. But Rory knew he must work fast. Sleet would not be far behind. He drew the Mackenzie's attention back to him.
What do you want? Why, the fairy flag, of course. To start with.
The Mackenzie leered again at Isabel. Rory fought the urge to rip the lewd smile from his face.
Never,
Rory said evenly. Cool authority rang clear in his voice, despite the presence of the claymore pressed to his neck.
We shall see.
The Mackenzie turned to Isabel.
You, whore, bring me the flag, and no tricks. I know what it looks like.
Never.
Isabel met Rory's eyes, her voice imitating the calm authority she had heard in his.
You dare defy me! You, the strumpet that lured my son to his death! I will enjoy watching you beg. How much do you care for your former handfast husband?
The Mackenzie flicked his claymore, and the razor-sharp sword sliced a deep gash across the top of Rory's bare shoulder. Rory didn't flinch, but Isabel cried out with horror as blood gushed from the wound.
We'll see how determined you are to defy me as I cut him apart, limb by limb. How long do you think you'll be able to stomach his pain? By the time I'm done, you'll be begging me to cut his throat.
Pleasure transformed the Mackenzie's face as he spoke. The quest for revenge had deadened the man. There was nothing left in his soul but evil. Rory knew that the Mackenzie would kill them, with or without the flag. He did not doubt his ability to take the man one-on-one, but if the Mackenzie turned on Isabel, he needed a distraction, and not the one Isabel proposed, so that he could get his weapon. His gaze moved around the room, from the fireplace, to the chair, to Isabel's trunk, that she'd never sent for. His gaze jerked back. The fireplace. Isabel's trunks. A slow smile slid over his face. He would give the Mackenzie what he wanted. Rory turned to Isabel.
Isabel, love, we have no choice. Give him the flag.
He pointed to her trunk.
It's in my trunk over there.
Rory saw relief and understanding flash in her eyes. She moved toward the chest, pulling the sheeting along with her to cover her nakedness. Slowly, she opened the lid and retrieved Bess's shawl from the stack of linens. Reverently, she held up the shawl for the Mackenzie to see. When her eyes looked to Rory's, he flicked his glance over to the fire. She nodded, and he knew she understood. Isabel took a seemingly innocent step toward the fireplace.
Here it is!
She held it up for Mackenzie to see, then quickly crumpled the thin silk into a ball.
Give me the flag, Gel, or I will sever his head from his body. No!
Rory waited, making sure the Mackenzie's greedy eyes stayed on the flag. A few seconds were all he needed.
Here, if you want it, catch!
And before the Mackenzie realized what she was about to do, Isabel tossed the shawl into the crackling flames of the fire.
No!
The Mackenzie yelled. He lunged for the piece of cloth, using his claymore to lift it from the flames, and Rory rolled off the bed naked and pulled a dirk from beneath the pile of his discarded clothing.
Get back, Isabel, he ordered softly.
She ran to the far corner of the room, as far from the Mackenzie's reach as possible. But there was no need. The distraction had worked. With the Mackenzie's gaze focused on the flag, Rory was afforded the precious seconds he needed to attack. The familiar hot rush of blood and clarity of mind descended on him, as it always did in battle. Dirk raised, Rory lunged toward the Mackenzie. He moved with lethal precision, his eyes narrowed in on the kill. Too late. The Mackenzie realized his error. He turned at the last minute to ward off the blow, but his efforts were futile. Rory would not be denied. He easily blocked the swing of the Mackenzie's sword. With the steely determination of a man intent on protecting the woman he loved, Rory plunged his dirk deep into the heart of his prey. The Mackenzie's eyes rounded, and his mouth opened in surprise. The horrible sounds of a gurgling death echoed in the room as he remained pinned by the dirk against the fireplace. Rory released his hold on the dirk, and the Mackenzie chief slipped to the floor, his face a death mask of shock, his cold, flat eyes fixed on eternal nothingness, like those of his son months before. It was over. Isabel ran into his arms.
I thought he was going to kill us.
Rory smoothed her hair.
I would never let anyone harm you.
But the fierce pounding of his heart told him danger was much closer than he would have liked. There were still no sounds of an attack, but he would have to be ready. The Mackenzie had not come alone. She looked up at him with tears in her eyes.
Oh, Rory, I'm so sorry. I swear I didn't know he was watching me.
His fingers pressed against her lips.
Shh, love, I trust you.
He held her out to look at her. A black scowl suddenly descended across his handsome face.
But I thought we agreed that you would not do anything reckless ever again. Allowing that sheet to slip was no accident.
He could see the color spread across her cheeks, knowing very well to what he referred. She tried to look contrite.
I had to get that blade away from your neck. I could think of no other way to distract him.
I know what you were trying to do, but next time save your seductions for me, and only me.
She frowned.
If you'll recall, I tried, but you were immune, frustratingly so.
Rory shook his head. Nay, lass, never immune.
He pulled her close again and kissed her, telling her with his mouth and the hardness of his body how much she affected him. Reluctantly, he broke the kiss.
Later, I have to raise the men and see to the safety of the keep.
His mind was racing. He realized that the Mackenzie must have traveled fast to arrive before Isabel, but he could not be sure how far the rest would be behind.
The entrance!
Rory nodded.
Aye, it's where they will try to enter.
He turned away to gather his clothes when he heard Isabel gasp. The sheet she held was covered with blood.
Your shoulder! It's bleeding!
'Tis nothing, just a scratch.
One that hurt like hell. Their eyes met. He knew she wanted to argue, but there was no time.
Just see that you don't get any more.
He dropped a quick kiss on her mouth.
I'll do my best.
It was easier than Rory expected. The thirst for revenge had driven the Mackenzie to act precipitously in anticipation of Sleet's arrival. The guardsmen who had accompanied the Mackenzie were waiting for the return of their chief by the secret entrance, only to be surprised by Rory and his men. When Sleet did arrive, there would be no one left to meet him, no one left to pass on the location of the secret entrance. Within a few hours, Rory had secured the keep and returned to his room.
Isabel was waiting with a needle to stitch up his wound. Later that morning, they sat across a small table that had been set up for Isabel to eat in his chamber. Rory stretched out his long, muscular legs, sat back in his chair with a goblet of Kurim, and watched her, reluctant to take his eyes off her, lest she disappear. He still couldn't believe she was here.
"I don't think I have ever seen you enjoy a meal more,"
he said, amused. Isabel looked somewhat shamefaced, aware that she had attacked her platter with a rather unladylike gusto.
"I'm afraid I'm quite ravenous. I've been fighting bouts of nausea for the past couple of weeks."
She wrinkled her nose.
"I can't abide the smells of certain foods, especially herring,"
she said with a shudder. "Just like my mother when she was..." Rory froze, forcing himself to stay calm, but his pulse quickened with possibility. She couldn't be. But he, more than anyone, knew that she could. The memory of their night of celebration almost 2 months ago, when he'd lost control and spilled his seed deep inside her. His heart dropped. Their child. Could Isabel be carrying their child? Emotion gripped his chest with an intensity that stunned him. He wanted it with every fiber of his being. He took a long sip of Kurim, his fingers squeezing the goblet so hard that his knuckles turned white. As casually as he could muster, he asked,
"Isabel, do you remember the night after the gathering?"
She looked at him questioningly, her brows a perfect V above her tiny nose.
"Of course."
He held her gaze intently.
"Have you had your flux since then?"
She tilted her head, considering.
"No, I don't think so. Why?"
She broke off with a sharp intake of breath, and her hand flew over her mouth, as understanding dawned. She looked at him, eyes wide with disbelief.
"A babe!"
"'Tis possible," he said, his voice thick with emotion. Her hand dropped to cover her stomach.
"Dear God! How could I not have guessed? I've been so worried about everything else, I never even considered."
Rory could have put his face in his hands and wept, from joy, that something so precious could have been created from their love, and from regret. "I sent her away. I could have lost them both. Never again." He stood up and pulled her into his arms, cradling her gently against him, overwhelmed by what he could have lost, but had now been returned to him.
"Oh, Rory, I'm sorry," she sobbed.
He tilted her chin to his, peering deep into tumultuous seas of violet.
"What foolishness is this? Why would you be sorry? I know you did not want a child to complicate matters."
Rory smiled. "A bairn will not complicate anything." In truth, he could think of nothing more perfect.
"But what of the alliance?"
"There is no longer an alliance with Argyle. I decided some time ago that I could not let you go."
She looked as though he'd handed her the moon. She realized what it could have cost him.
"But what of Trotternish?"
Quickly he explained about the letter he'd received from King James. Rory knew that James would be angry about the Mackenzie's death, but the king would not fault him for killing a man who'd attacked him in his own bedchamber. A huge smile spread across her face.
"So my letter to Queen Anne helped?"
"Coming on the heels of my letter to the king. I'm sure it did not hurt. Although with what you've brought from your uncle, I think James would have been persuaded to our way of thinking in any event."
He looked deep into her eyes. "So you see, I knew before you'd arrived that you would not betray me." He smiled.
"Not that I'm not pleased with what you brought me, but I'd already made plans to come after you."
"You did?"
"I wrote to your father. In fact, I think we can expect him soon."
"My father? Here?"
"I hope to persuade him that a marriage, a real marriage this time, would be to his benefit. I believe I made him an offer that he couldn't refuse."
Her eyebrows drew tighter together.
"What kind of offer?"
"I offered him my support against the Mackenzies in his defense of Castle Strom."
She threw her arms around his neck.
"You agreed to do that for me?"
Rory grinned. In truth,
"'twas not a very difficult decision. The Mackenzies are no friends of ours, especially today. And with your letter, I may have some influence with the king soon.
So by marrying me, you will be able to reclaim the land you've sought."
He knew what she was thinking.
"Aye, but that is not why I want to marry you."
He had to tell her how important she was to him.
"You are a MacLeod. You are a part of my family.
I was lost without you." Her brows knit together across her nose.
"I don't understand. You repudiated the Hanfast."
"Aye, love. I'm sorry for that." More sorry than she would ever know. Those were dark days indeed. He pressed a soft kiss on her mouth. "But don't you remember the bard's tale? Only a MacLeod can touch the fairy flag." Isabel tossed back her head and laughed.
"I wish you had thought of that before you sent me back to my uncle. It would have saved me quite a lot of heartache,"
she said sternly, but the amused twinkle in her eyes ruined the effect. "I must admit, I didn't think of it until later. But I think I always knew that you belonged to me, from the first moment I saw you." He smiled at her look of disbelief. "Maybe it didn't always seem like it, Isabel, but it was there." Thank God he'd recognized it before it was too late. Isabel had opened up a part of him that he hadn't known existed. The life of a leader was a lonely one indeed, consumed by duty and responsibility. Rory had lost sight of what was truly important. His sister's happiness, his brother's, and his own. He'd been wrong. Isabel wasn't his weakness, but his greatest strength. The intensity of emotion that he felt for this tiny lass humbled him. Rory drew her into his arms and looked straight into her eyes, so there would be no mistaking his next words. Words that would bind them together forever. "I love you, Isabel, with all of my heart." Much later that evening, after tearful reunions with Bessie, Margaret, and Alex, Isabel sighed deeply and snuggled back against the warm, solid strength behind her. Awash in the sensation of happiness so complete, it took her breath away. She felt his arms tighten instinctively in response, drawing her even closer. Her bottom slid perfectly into the natural bend of his hips and legs. One arm slid snugly under her breasts, the other wrapped almost protectively around her still flat stomach. A babe. Isabel still could not believe it. The discovery of the tiny life growing inside her had moved her beyond words. Never could she have imagined the intensity of emotion that had come with the knowledge that she was carrying Rory's child. She was bound to this man in a way that she could not have comprehended a year ago. That such a blessing could spring out of such difficulty was a profound testament to the strength of their love and the power of forgiveness. Her head still spun with all that had happened. He'd forgiven her, saved her from death at the hands of a madman, declared his love, and given her the gift of a child, all in the space of one day. An impressive feat, even for a man like Rory MacLeod. But it was what he'd almost given up that had struck her to the core. She'd been astonished when he'd confided that he'd intended to marry her, even if the king had refused his request to include Trottinish in her toca. He'd risked his duty for her. Knowing what that choice could have cost him humbled her. Rory had given her so much, more than she'd ever dreamed possible. A place in his family, a new understanding of her own, a child, and most of all, his love. Without him she would be incomplete, the impressionable, vulnerable child she had been before she came to Dunvegan. She could feel his even breathing on the back of her neck. Having assumed he was sleeping, Isabel started at the sound of his voice.
"What are you thinking about, my love?"
Isabel smiled.
"That I have never felt so gloriously happy. I think I could stay in this position for the rest of my life."
Rory moved over her, rolling her on her back, so that he could look in her eyes. Gently, he kissed the tip of her nose.
"Hmm,"
he murmured, tracing feathery kisses down the side of her cheek. "Perhaps I have been derelict in my duty, then." His tongue darted between her parted lips, sweeping the inside of her mouth. Instantly, she felt the tingling waves of sensation spread through her limbs like a warm caress. Just the arousing taste of his mouth, and he could leave her begging for more.
"How do you mean?"
she managed to ask through the haze of desire already spiraling through her body. His mouth grew more demanding as he rolled on top of her and began vigorously seducing her with his lips and tongue, leaving her breathless. After a moment, he lifted his head and grinned.
"We are not yet married, and already you grow content with one position."
"Rogue, you know that's not what I meant. And you definitely haven't been derelict in your duty."
She pushed him away with a laugh.
"As to the other, now that I think of it, I don't recall being asked to marry you."
She cocked a brow.
"Are you so sure of my response?"
An endearingly befuddled expression crossed his face, before it was replaced by an arrogant grin. He sat up against the headboard and folded his arms across his chest. Isabel sucked in her breath. He was beautiful. All that strength. The smooth, tanned skin stretched taut against the rock-hard muscles of his arms and shoulders. She would never tire of looking at him, delighting in the fact that he was hers.
"You have to marry me," he pointed out. "For the child."
His gaze slid down her nakedness, resting on the rounded curve of her backside. He frowned.
"Your hips are too narrow. I worry that our brawl laddie will be too big for you."
She savored a thought of their child for a moment, before she processed what he'd said. Her brows shot up.
"And how can you possibly be sure that the babe will be a boy?"
Rory chuckled. "Of course he will be a boy,"
he said, as if any other alternative were impossible. He drew himself up even more proudly.
"We will call him John."
Isabel shook her head. One day he would have to learn that there were just some things even he couldn't command.
"Are there any other reasons I should marry you?"
she was almost afraid to ask. He'd finished his teasing. The playful arrogance was gone, replaced by a soft expression that warmed her to her toes. He lifted her chin to hold her gaze.
"I've saved my best argument for last."
She waited, her breath caught firmly in her chest. "Because my life would be meaningless without you. You are my light. I made the biggest mistake of my life when I sent you away, and a curtain of darkness descended over my soul. I love you more than I ever thought possible." He moved his hand over her stomach protectively.
"I vow my eternal devotion to you and our child."
Isabel was held spellbound by the deep, unerring love she beheld in his tender gaze. The stars at last aligned, shining bright in the twinkle of his eye. He kissed her mouth softly.
"Isabel, you have taught me what it is to love. Will you do me the great honor of becoming my wife?"
Unbridled joy spread through her, her eyes blurred with tears of happiness. In his sparkling eyes, unveiled and brimming with emotion, she beheld the wondrous promise of a new beginning, a promise of forever. Their love was not as fragile as she'd thought. It was strong enough to weather the slings and arrows of the capricious fates that had brought them together. She would never doubt it again. She nodded, and simply said,
"I thought you would never ask."
Epilogue. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. Matthew, chapter 5, verse 38. Holyrood Palace, summer, 1603. Rory shifted impatiently in the audience chamber of Holyrood Palace, waiting for the presentations to begin. Sensing his disquiet, Isabel glanced up from the sleeping infant in her arms to give him an encouraging smile.
"Rory, Margaret will be fine. Don't worry. She's in good hands."
Isabel indicated the dour Viking positioned protectively at Margaret's side. "I know," Rory said, returning her smile. His heart swelled, studying the beloved countenances of his wife and child. A more perfect picture he could not imagine. If possible, motherhood had made Isabel even more beautiful, bringing a serenity to her expression and a maturity to her bearing that had not been there before. She bloomed with the confidence of love and of being loved in return. And the tiny cherub in her arms. He felt emotion squeeze his throat. Gently, with the back of his finger, he swept the velvety soft cheek. Rory's love for his wife and devotion to their child grew more powerful with each new day that dawned. He'd found a peace and contentment that he hadn't realized existed. He thanked God for his good fortune and for the strange twist of fate that had brought Isabel to Dunvegan. His gaze turned to his sister, resplendent in her court finery, as she waited at the end of the room to take her turn down the aisle. Margaret's golden blonde ringlets, caught up high on her head, dangled becomingly down her back, glistening silvery white in the flickering flames of the ceiling candelabrum. His mind turned to a day not so long ago when he'd witnessed a very different kind of procession. "Margaret has gone through much worse," Rory said, more to himself. "She's stronger now." Or perhaps she'd always been strong, and it had just taken Isabel to remind them of that fact. Isabel, who with her unwavering faith had made this day possible. Holyrood was the final stop on Margaret and Colin's extended wedding journey across the Highlands. As promised, Isabel and Rory had joined them for support. Rory knew it couldn't hurt Margaret's chances for acceptance at court to have the new royal favorites by her side. Warning the king of a treasonous plot tended to have that effect. Still, though he knew how important this day was to Margaret, he'd fought it, unable to ignore the shadow of uncertainty.
"Rory, if you don't stop frowning like that, you're going to terrify all the ladies,"
Isabel teased. He folded his arms across his chest and set his jaw in a hard line.
"Good. Perhaps it will remind them to curb the lash of their harpy tongues."
Her eyes narrowed.
"You promised."
He scowled.
"Aye, I did."
Was there anything he would not do for his wife? The fact that he was at court right now probably answered that question.
"Though it was not a fair fight."
Isabel gasped with mock affront.
"Do you impugn my honor, Sir Knight?"
she asked, a teasing reference to the rumors that the king intended to bestow a knighthood upon him.
"No, just your methods of persuasion."
Isabel shrugged, eyes twinkling.
"It worked, didn't it?"
"You are an impudent wench, Isabel MacLeod."
"You'll have to remind me of that later,"
she giggled, and turned back to watch the proceedings. Rory held his breath as Margaret's name was called, bracing himself for the jeers. Isabel slipped her hand into his and gave it a squeeze in silent communication. He watched as Margaret urged her shoulders back and allowed Colin to lead her down the aisle toward King James and Queen Anne, the newly crowned King and Queen of England.
"Is that the one-eyed woman?"
he heard someone say, and tensed. The same voice continued,
"But she is so pretty. Such a fey creature."
More murmured voices followed her down the aisle.
"I thought she was maimed."
A male voice entered the fray.
"Why would Sleet repudiate her to marry the Mackenzie lass? Perhaps 'tis he who suffered the loss of an eye."
Laughter joined the stranger's words. Rory exhaled. As his sister floated regally by, Isabel turned to him with an "I told you so," shining in her lovely violet eyes. His heart squeezed, overcome with love for the woman who had already given him so much. They had come such a long way together. Ironically, brought together by the events of that horrible summer day 4 years ago, when Sleet had cast Margaret off in that cruel spectacle. Sleet was no longer a thorn in his side, as he was currently enjoying the hospitality of the king's guards. Although Rory knew Sleet would not stay imprisoned by the king forever, the MacDonald chief no longer concerned him. Rory had everything he wanted. Looking at the proud face of his sister, the beaming face of his wife, and the angelic face of his precious daughter, Myrie, whom Isabel insisted on calling John, Rory felt the last embers of vengeance dying in his heart. He had won. Happiness was undoubtedly the best revenge of all. Author's note: The War of the One-Eyed Woman happened much as I described it. The MacDonald of Sleat's cruel repudiation of his handfast to Margaret MacLeod started a bloody 2-year-long feud. History did not provide the cause or extent of Margaret MacLeod's eye injury, so I opted for giving her a happy ending. I thought after the horrible way she was treated by Sleat that she deserved one. Rory MacLeod married Isabel of Glengarry probably earlier than 1602. Unlike Sleat and Margaret, there is no evidence that Rory and Isabel were handfasted prior to marrying. And although there is no mention of love between Rory and his wife, the 11 children they had together suggests at the very minimum a unity of purpose. Of late, there has been some debate about the way handfasting has been portrayed by novelists. Some argue that there was never any such thing as a probationary marriage, and that the popular romance concept of a year and a day is pure fiction. They argue that a handfast was basically a betrothal, and that once the betrothal was consummated, it became a marriage. Perhaps this was the legal definition, but I think that in practice a handfast probably was a sort of probationary marriage. The War of the One-Eyed Woman certainly suggests this. In nearly every book I used to research this story, I came across some reference to handfasting, and it was always assumed to be a sort of probationary marriage, with marital privileges. The fairy flag of the MacLeods is merely a wispy scrap of fabric now, but it is still quite something to behold. It hangs framed in the great hall of Dunvegan Castle, which is still the seat of the present MacLeod of MacLeod. Until the mid-18th century, Dunvegan was accessible only by sea. Now, there is a beautiful entry on the landward side of the castle. Although it seems that there should be one, there is no evidence of a secret entrance to the castle. Dunvegan is a wonderful place to visit, and the dungeon, as I described, is quite horrible. And a rather cruel MacLeod chief did have the kitchens vent into the dungeon. Although there was no record that James VI brokered Isabel's marriage, there is evidence that she was part of Queen Anne's retinue. And as Rory was indeed at the Horn around this time, I thought their marriage could have been a diplomatic solution by King James to unite the feuding MacDonalds and MacLeods. The Lordship of the Isles represented the height of Gaelic political power and culture in Scotland. For almost 150 years, under the leadership of Clan Donald, the Lords effectively ruled a large part of West Scotland and the Isles independently of the rest of the country. The Lordship forfeited to the Crown in 1493. There were a couple of attempts to revive it, including the purported attempt I described in a letter to Queen Elizabeth by Donald Gorm Moore, the MacDonald of Sleat. The fall of the Lordship ushered in the period of Highland history known as the Age of Feuds and Forays, and a shift in power from Clan Donald to Clan Gordon and Clan Campbell. Finally, King James was already in England by the time Margaret made her appearance at court in the summer of 1603. King James left Edinburgh for England on April 5, 1603. He returned to Scotland only once, in 1617. This concludes Highlander Untamed. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks, and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalogue.